Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Brianna Kurtz, host of Eat Your Words. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to The Farm Report, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here. It's a rainy day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today we are going to be talking with some folks from the Humane Society of the United States. Now, normally when I think of the Humane Society, I've thought about, you know, animal rescue, wildlife protection. Livestock is not what usually comes to mind. So I was really excited to hear about a new initiative that they're undertaking, looking to set up agricultural councils in states throughout the U.S., to start talking a little bit more about how we think about animal welfare and animal rights when we're talking about livestock. And we're joined on the line today by Eric Swofford. Eric is the Director of Rural Development of Outreach for the Humane Society of the United States. He's a sixth-generation beef cattle farmer. He's joining us from Tennessee. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's glad to be here.
And we are also joined today by Adam Price. Adam is a new member of the Agricultural Council for Oklahoma. And when he's not serving in that role, he's on the board of directors for the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, and has been a longtime advocate looking at bringing consumers better access to regionally produced goods. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
So I wanted to kind of kick things off by getting a little better sense from you guys about kind of the lay of the land as it relates to Oklahoma. But before we jump into that, Eric, I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit of a sense of what the impetus for this initiative was, why the Humane Society felt it was important to set up these agricultural councils, and how far along are you in your goal to hit all 50 states?
Well, first of all, I'll answer the last part of that first. As of today, we have ag councils in 8 states, and Oklahoma being actually the newest one. We're very, very excited about what we're going to be doing in Oklahoma. And kind of the thought process behind these ag councils came up about 3.5 years ago by HSUS, and that's long before I came on board. I've been in my current position since spring of 2013. But the thought process to form agricultural councils in the different states, of course, the Humane Society of the United States, going back to its very foundation and its very beginning, have its roots in animal agriculture. The first major initiative that HSUS actually did was pass the Humane Slaughter Act that, of course, is still intact and still under enforcement today. But the thought process was to have people on the ground who knows better about the way we should be treating our livestock and the way agriculture should look in different parts of the country than farmers, ranchers, and agriculturalists like Adam Price, around the country and in those states. So we decided to form these ag councils to do a couple of different things with HSUS. And the first thing is to advise our state directors on agricultural policy, particularly animal agriculture policy in those states, and also to serve as outreach agents to inform people and to make people aware of agricultural issues as they come up in their state, and also they work to promote and open markets for humane, sustainable agriculture. You know, in this country, we're looking at, in lots of places, almost food deserts, and it's becoming increasingly difficult for independent farmers and ranchers to stay in business and to be economically viable and do things the right way. and for people to be able to buy local products and local food. And we all know that there is a market and there is a demand. We just have to educate people about it and promote it as Adam is doing with Oklahoma Food Cooperative. But we have to make people aware that there are local, humane, sustainable food products. Those products are healthy. And when we encourage people to buy locally and we support humane, sustainable agriculture, what we know is that type of agriculture is good for the animal, it's good for the farmer, it's good for local economies, it's good for the consumer, and it's good for the environment. Things like that are just good for Oklahoma, and Humane Society of the United States is on the front line building agricultural councils and working with farmers and ranchers that raise livestock in a humane and sustainable manner across this country to do just that.
So I think what's interesting, you know, Oklahoma joining the 8 states that you have, the other states that are currently on board, Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, North Carolina, and Ohio. I think it's exciting to see that the middle of the country, where a lot of the food that's produced, in particular a lot of the livestock in this country is raised, we're at the top of the list for this initiative. Looking specifically at Oklahoma, I was taking, you know, a little peek from the most recent ag census, and it looks like for kind of cattle and calf production, Oklahoma is 5th in the nation, hogs and pigs, 8th in the nation, and then 13th for broilers and other kind of meat chickens. So definitely kind of up there with regards to the volume of livestock in the country. Obviously, also the area known for, you know, wheat, hay, and alfalfa production. Adam, I'm wondering if you can give us a little sense on the ground as to, you know, what your background is with the food co-op and why you felt joining the council was the right move for you and what kind of voice you hope to bring to the council.
Well, effectively, the first that I had heard about the state agricultural councils was just a couple of months ago when I originally met Eric at a meeting in Tulsa where he was the presenter and he was outlining what the Humane Society was hoping to do in terms of with the ag councils and in terms of benefits to local small to mid-scale sustainable farmers and humane farmers. Really, what I was struck by was how much overlap there really was in terms of what the Humane Society wanted to do and what the focus of my working life over the past few years has been with the Oklahoma Food Cooperative. You know, the core values of the Oklahoma Food Cooperative are environmental sustainability, social justice, and economic viability, and those overlapped so much in terms of trying to support and create a marketplace for the products of a sustainable, just, and humane agricultural system, and that those objectives really mirrored exactly what the Humane Society was wanting to do as well. So, you know, the decision to jump on board and become a member of this agricultural council in Oklahoma was really kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So you're joined by some other folks on the council, former Senator Paul, I'm not sure, how do you pronounce his last name?
Maggie.
Okay, thank you. You know, who served, you know, for 12 years in the Oklahoma State Senate. Harlan, who is, you know, a lawyer who's focused a lot on agricultural issues as it relates to, you know, air and water pollution, eminent domain, contracts, compliance. And then Lauren and her husband, who run Circle M, which is a sustainable managed cow-calf and grass-fed cattle operation. So it's interesting you have quite a diversity on the council there. Is that similar to kind of the model for councils, Eric, in other parts of the country?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we try to build these councils with diversity of the members, you know, because obviously with diversity comes strength. You know, we do have people that look at these agricultural issues and come at them from different sides, but obviously people that align with us on their values and their goals for agriculture and for the future of agriculture in Oklahoma, just as the folks do in Nebraska, Iowa, Colorado, and our other states. But, yeah, we actually look for diversity. We look for different different strengths, and people bring a little different viewpoints to the table. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm an East Tennessee cattle farmer, as you mentioned at the beginning. You know, my family's been running cows on the exact same piece of ground for six generations, and my boss, our vice president over all of outreach and engagement that started the Rural Development Outreach Program, is a hog farmer from Missouri. So, you know, we kind of laugh. His background's in the hog business, and mine's in the cattle business. He's from Missouri. I'm from Tennessee, and we work together very, very, very closely, and work together very well. And yes, it is what we look for with some diversity, and for folks to come at this with the same goals from different angles, and offer a different viewpoint and a little different perspective to obviously advise us in the most effective way possible. And I'll be honest, I just cannot get over how excited I am about the quality of the people that we've got to start our council in Oklahoma that we've just launched. And these are just fantastic, phenomenal individuals that every time I get to sit down with any of them or talk on the phone or even some of our email conversations, I'm just blown away with how much depth of knowledge they have in terms of agriculture and our food system and the direction that we're going and the direction we need to go to promote humane, sustainable farming in Oklahoma.
Well, so I want to talk a little bit, you know, where we can, more specifically about where the Humane Society kind of sets benchmarks and how it's working to kind of educate itself with regards to different livestock procedures. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, you know, maybe it would help to focus things, you know, around a particular type of livestock. I'm not really sure, but one of the things that I thought was exciting about your mandate is you're looking to be a resource for farmers in transition. And what I'm hoping that means is that, you know, you're looking to work with producers all along the spectrum, making steps towards, you know, an increase in animal welfare. So often I feel like for consumers, it's really confusing because you're often set up with like two extremes. On one extreme, you know, you're looking at kind of large, you know, confined animal feeding operations where, you know, you've seen like the videos online of animals being kind of kicked and abused and crated with no space and, you know, living in kind of dirty, awful environments. And, you know, that's offered up as one ag model. And then on the other end, you have, you know, a completely pasture-based organic system that's, you know, wide open rolling hills and smiling cows, and that's on the other end of the spectrum. And obviously I think everyone on the call knows that there's things that fall all along that spectrum. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how, you know, you decide to focus your work. Is it around particular livestock? Is it specific issues that you're targeting? I mean, how do you kind of start?
I think I've got where you want to go with this, and let me back up and move forward a little bit along that scale.
Backing up and moving forward. I like that.
in a broad scope and a broad spectrum when it comes to livestock and livestock production and how we want to open markets and transition, and that's everything from holding consumer meetings where we literally teach people about labeling issues, where we teach people how to know their food by knowing their farmer and where they can buy humane, sustainable products, to holding true cost of food events where we educate people on the true cost of food and how some of these industrialized models of agriculture are propped up through government subsidies and that sort of thing. But we also work to educate farmers and ranchers who want to transition away from an industrialized model to a more sustainable, humane model of agriculture. And we do this by holding education seminars across the country. We work very closely with American Grass-Fed Association to certify farmers, to connect those people that would like to be grass-fed or connect with them to show them how they can become economically viable and how they can be profitable by running cattle, sheep, hogs, et cetera, in that manner We also work very closely with Certified Humane, with their certification program, with Global Animal Partnership, or the GAP program that sells branded products in several different stores and Whole Foods, just for an example. We work to connect farmers and ranchers with those certifiers, among others. We work to educate them on how they can be profitable and economically viable, and at the same time promote higher animal welfare in an environmentally sensitive and sustainable manner. So we do that as well. As far as the spectrum, everything from one end to the other, there are four principles that the Humane Society of the United States is just absolutely against. Just tell it like it is. We don't apologize for it. We think there are four things in production agriculture, livestock agriculture, obviously, or animal agriculture is what I'm speaking of. There are four things that we're just against. We're against tail docking or the cutting off of the tails of dairy cows. We're against gestation crates for sows. Again, gestation crates. It's not to speak of a farrowing crate, but a gestation crate we're against. We're against barren battery cages for hens, and we're against field crates. Those four things we think are the most egregious practices, and we think they're just simply wrong, and some things you just shouldn't do. At the same time, the United Egg Producers Association has come out in support of eliminating barren battery cages. Bill crates are almost a thing of the past through education and work. The tail docking of dairy cows, almost every veterinary medical association or independent veterinarian that you can find will say that is a bad practice and one that should be stopped. And gestation crates, as Temple Grandin, that's one of the most world-renowned and well-known behaviorists when it comes to livestock, and one of the foremost experts when it comes to animal welfare. I like a quote of hers when talking about gestation crates. It says, it'd be like sitting in a middle seat in coach on an airplane your entire life. We can just do better than that. And Iowa State has done some studies. Iowa State probably having one of the best swine research units in the country, if not the world, has done some research and shown that group housing is actually more economically viable than gestation crates anyway. So not only would it do a better job for the animal, probably a better lifestyle for the farmer and more environmentally sensitive to raise animals in a different manner, but also it's more financially advantageous. So
yeah, no.
And again, that study was done by Iowa State. So that kind of tells you where we are, and again, we work to transition to higher animal welfare standards, and work to promote humane, sustainable farming and open markets, and work to encourage policymakers to support policies that'll do the same thing.
It's interesting. You kind of hit all of the kind of contentious areas that I had in my list here, except for one, which is castration. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about your organization's stance on castration and how you communicate that both to consumer-facing groups and to farmers.
Sure. Well, first of all, castration, I said many times, if you line up a group of veterinarians, you will get a variety of answers. First of all, I will say that there's several that go in different routes. So several of the third party verifiers have different means, even that third party verifiers for a humane certification. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, have slightly different ideas on the way that they think it should be done. But when it comes to castration, we don't have a hard line policy on that. It is an issue that we're working on with several animal welfare experts. It's one that we're looking at in terms of research, one that we're talking about with our ag councils. But I think everyone would agree that the best way to deal with castration is at a very early age, and to get that done, or to use some kind of anesthetic, whether it's topical you know, et cetera. But again, that is a an area that is very difficult because most veterinarians see that a little differently and recommend different things. And you know, but again, most would agree that it's best to be done at a very, very early age. But again, you know, we look to the experts and on these issues, and look to our Ag Council members to advise us. And you know, I wish there was something that there were hardcore facts to say, you know, this is absolutely the best, no question. This is the highest animal welfare way to address this. And but you know, the fact is that today it's an issue that lots of folks are still working on.
Yeah, no.
You know, and we're one of them that's still working on this. But again, I think everyone would agree that it's best to be done at an early age or with some kind of a pain release.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to kind of put you on the spot there. I think it's just one, like...
Oh, absolutely not. No problem whatsoever. I really, really appreciate this opportunity to be on here for Adam and I to speak to you.
It's I feel like castration is one of those issues that... you know, it brings to mind, it's a very vivid kind of idea for people, but kind of the reason for it, the kind of management decisions, the timing of it, you know, it's like, I think really good to bring out some of the kind of gray areas in that conversation. And having, you know, myself, you know, castrated a number of piglets and been part of that process.
Sure.
I do think it's like one of those spaces that for the public would be great to be hearing a little bit more from kind of the who, what, when, where, why of that decision. But we don't have to talk anymore about castration today. We're going to take just a quick break and we come back. Adam will be looking back to you to talk a little bit more about the scene in Oklahoma. So hang tight, folks. You're listening to the Farm Report and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Reflex by Reflections.
In 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Hey, my name is Chris Kuzmi from Femen About It. My favorite food is liquid bread, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Liquid bread. I think he means beer. Femen About It, a great show on Monday nights if you're interested in the home brewing scene and all things fermented. Definitely check that out. But right now, you're listening to the Farm Report, and we are talking with some folks from the Humane Society of the United States about the new Oklahoma Agriculture Council. So, Adam, I wanted to touch base with you kind of in your seat as at the Oklahoma Food Co-op. You know, recently I was attending a panel discussion here in New York City talking about the future of meat. And the panel was super interesting. It, you know, had you know, everyone from kind of Peter Singer to, you know, the founder of our network here, Patrick Martins, who runs Heritage Foods USA. And in the midst of the panel, folks, there was like a rash of animal rights activists who stood up throughout the space and kind of, you know, attempted kind of a takedown of what was, you know, proving to be a pretty interesting conversation around kind of what we should think about when we're thinking about eating meat. And I'm wondering, for folks who maybe haven't spent much time in Oklahoma, if you can give us a sense of how does the community there think about eating meat? Is there a moral imperative that comes up in those conversations? Is there much of a vegan or vegetarian movement? And then for folks who are eating meat, you know, what are the types of questions that you're getting at the co-op? Like, what is it that people are like wanting or asking for, or are they not really asking for anything? I'm curious, like, if you can kind of give us the temperature from your perspective.
Well, in terms of the vegan and vegetarian question, I think there is a bit more of a move in that direction, particularly of people. I'm 34 years old, particularly of people my age that are concerned about the treatment of animals and in this country, particularly regarding the treatment of animals through the industrial system and through the confined feeding operations. However, I mean, I can speak personally to that in regard to, I was actually 5 or 6 years ago, before I found the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, I was actually moving more that direction myself because of those same concerns. However, when I found out, you know, the sheer number of people that were actually raising food both humanely and in a more healthy way for the animals and for the land, I realized that there was an alternative, and that's what we hope to provide with the Oklahoma Food Cooperative. And I think with our support of farmers that are trying to do things in a truly sustainable and humane way. And I think ultimately that's what people are most concerned about, from what I can tell. So much of what we distribute through our system in Oklahoma, through the Oklahoma Food Cooperative, is grass-fed, humanely raised meat from animals that are treated ethically and humanely throughout the course of their lives. And I think ultimately that's what people are really wanting more of. There's been so much awareness raised over the past 5 to 10 years of really the reality of how we raise the meat to support the standard American diet in this country, and people are looking for an alternative. And whether or not they choose to go a vegan or vegetarian route, or whether they seek out more localized options for humanely raised meat and meat without, you know, the steroids and the hormones and the antibiotics that are so prevalent in the industrial system, I think that's what people are really after.
Yeah, I think to me there's like something very interesting about an animal welfare organization that, you know, when you're talking about livestock, you're talking about an animal who essentially its death is coming at our hands. You know, like we're, from the moment that it's born, the entire purpose of its being is to be consumed for food. So there is a bit of, I think, kind of inherent tension to that idea. I think, you know, alternatively, if we're not eating livestock, then they essentially don't exist. You know, they're not, they might be a few of them in a zoo somewhere, but they don't exist in the wild. They're not right. Pets that we have at home, you know? So if you're going to be, I'm wondering maybe, Eric, you can talk a little bit about this. Like, how do you kind of reconcile that? Like, how do people kind of deal with that tension of like, ultimately, like we are creating an animal to kill it for consumption? I mean, I personally have like no issues in this area, but I know it's a question that comes up. We get asked a lot, and I'm, you know, the Humane Society does so much work with animals in all different types of areas, and I'm wondering how you make sense of livestock in particular. does that, I don't know, that question's like a little bit meandering, but...
No, that's okay. That's a question that I get more as a cattle farmer and someone that has worked in the livestock area of my whole professional life. I answer that question a lot. And, you know, that is true, that animal is raised, and it's raised for food. You know, that is absolutely true. And, you know, I like the way my good friend and Ag Council member Kevin Fulton says, you know, on my farm, animals are going to have one bad day. You know, and the animals on our farm in Pikeville, Tennessee, are going to have one bad day, the same bad day that each of us are actually going to have. And is that animal raised for food? Absolutely. That animal is raised, and we're going to consume that animal, but we're going to see to it that animal has a quality of life that means something. We think we're going to be good stewards of that animal, just like we're going to be good stewards of the land and all those things that we're entrusted with. And you know, that's just where it is. You know, with the Humane Society believes that we have been given dominion over these animals, and with that dominion comes a responsibility to see to it that their welfare is taken care of. And just because we're going to consume that animal, and we're going to use that animal for food, doesn't mean it's nothing more than a production unit, and doesn't mean that we don't have a responsibility to see to it that its welfare is taken care of, and that it is treated as the sentient being that it is.
Yeah, and I think that, to me, like looking at the website, you know, that, you know, your goal through the Humane Society is really to create a humane and sustainable world for all animals. But then there's that second part that comes in, you know, that this will also benefit people. And I think, you know, to me, that says it very, very neatly. And like as a mission for your organization, I think really allows you to pursue things that, to my opinion, are a little bit more reality based. I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, something like 9 billion, you know, animals, livestock were consumed in the last year, that, you know, a vegan agenda just kind of doesn't make sense. I feel personally, if you want to pursue humane treatment of animals, that putting your weight behind organizations that are moving that forward in the livestock arena is a smart place to invest. And so I want to thank you both so much for...
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for that vote of confidence. We really appreciate that.
Yeah. It was great to have you guys join us today. And I know if folks want to find out more, they can visit the website, www.humanesociety.org. Really appreciate having you both on.
Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Farm Report. This, like all 35 of our weekly shows, is available for free by visiting our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like the show, you can also become a subscriber via iTunes or Stitcher Smart Radio. Get it delivered right to your smartphone every week. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're supported by our members and listeners like you. If you believe in our work, please visit the site, click that Donate tab, and become a member today. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.